I tell you about my. Well, let me just say a couple things about Chester. Now, a lot of you probably didn't know Chester. Chester was a good friend of James Sr. And it was probably, what, 2-3 months ago, remember, James? He couldn't make it to church, but he wanted to listen to the sermon. And so James called him up on his cell phone. And he just put it on.
Hello, there we go. Is this one working? All right. The louder I can. Anyway, I thought that was so cool. He listened by cell phone, and then he joined the church, but he couldn't do that either by coming here, so some of us went over there. And so we had our first out-of-building joining here at Pathway. That was maybe a month or so, 6 weeks ago, and Chester has been struggling for quite a while. And yet it was a big surprise that he died this past week. So we're going to miss Chester, and I'm sure you are too. Do you know when the funeral is going to be and so on? Do we have that? 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon here. Okay. I want to tell you about my first visit to an AA meeting. It was a few years back with my first church, and I was going to preach using kind of as a guideline the 12 steps of AA. And if you look at those 12 steps, they're really quite incredible. They really follow the way of salvation almost. So I was going to use that as my guide over a 12-week period. And we had had quite a few AA folk coming to our church. And one of them was a friend of mine, and he invited me to his meeting. And they have closed meetings, and they have open meetings. The closed meetings are only for AA folk. The open meetings are for anyone. And this was an open meeting, but was really closed because no one from the outside ever came. It was a group of about 15 people. And he invited me to this open meeting, which really was kind of a closed thing. So anyway, I pull into the driveway of where it was, and I didn't see my friend, so I stayed in the car like a guy would, right? Guys will take a bullet for their family. If there's some danger thing ahead, a guy will take a bullet for his family. But if it involves some social situation, the guy always sends his wife ahead. I've seen many people come and visit the church. They usually send the wife first, see if it's okay socially, and then finally the guy comes. The guys will take a bullet, but they're a little fearful of the social thing. So I did the guy thing. I stayed in my car, and I waited. And then my friend finally arrived, and I got out, and just before we went in, my friend nudged me, tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "Look, when we go into the meeting, don't worry about it. If someone asks you a question, just say pass." So I thought, okay, I'll just say pass. So I get into the meeting. While the meeting had started, we walked into the room, and someone was pouring coffee, getting the coffee and the chairs ready. And he said hello to my friend. Of course, they knew each other. And then he saw me, and he said, "Hello. Is this your first time?" And the meeting hadn't started, so I thought, pass is, can I just say pass? That's not going to work. So I thought, well, I got to answer this question. So I said, yes, it's my first time. Well, by the time the meeting had started, this guy had passed the word along to everyone else that this was my first meeting. And so the whole meeting, you know, I wanted to be a fly in the wall just to see what this is like and so on. That's my only purpose in being there. The whole meeting was centered on me. I was the purpose of the whole thing. And what they do is they look at one of the 12 steps. They go to a meeting, they look at one of the 12 steps, and then they sort of open it up and they go right around the room. And you can share what's going on in your life. Well, what each one shared was they all looked at me and said, "We know what it's like. Being, you know, your first meeting, we know what it's like," and you know, and they would tell me their story, and they just poured out their hearts for an hour, and I was the focal point of all their testimony. And I tell you, when I walked away, I was so impressed with how ordinary people who had struggled with many things and still struggling with many things, had so much to share and were so eager to do it. They didn't have a course in evangelism. They didn't have a pastor ragging on them to, you know, tell, you know, the good news to people. They just did it. They couldn't help it. they knew exactly what they were saved from. And when they saw someone that they thought needed that same kind of salvation, they couldn't help but share. It's like, you know, when you find this ice cream shop and the ice cream is incredible. You've never had such a good ice cream. You have to tell somebody. It's not like you have to be motivated. It's not like you have to find the right words. It's not like you have to, you know, figure out how to do this. You just do it. Because this thing is so good. This thing made such a big difference in your life. You have to share it. It's interesting. During their sharing, they often talked about a higher power. They used God, or they talked about a higher power. They sort of interchangeable. And they talked about how God or the higher power helped and so on. They kept mentioning it throughout all their testimonies. And this was in Canada. And Canada is more secular than the United States. In fact, in the area we were planting a church, 5% of the people actually went to church. So people are a little hesitant about the whole God thing. And so one of the guys, feeling like I'm a new person and wondering how I was taking all this God talk, he comes up to me and he puts his arm around me and he says, "You know what? Don't sweat the God talk." Not knowing that I'm a pastor, that this is what I do. But I was so impressed that they just put it right out there. Well, the thing we're going to be talking about this morning is the world. And not kind of the global world, but the world, the people in the world who are not connected to Christ. Those that don't have a relationship with Jesus. Those that don't worship Him. I had you this past week read Acts chapter 1. If you're new visiting with us, we have a Bible reading schedule. The new one for this next month is right on your seat. And it's a chapter every day. Well, you read Acts chapter 1. And in Acts chapter 1, Jesus is sort of giving His farewell message before He ascends into heaven. And He says to His disciples and His followers, "I want you to be my witnesses. And I want you to be my witnesses starting in Jerusalem." You know the people in Jerusalem. They're right here. You've grown up with some of these people. Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, which is a little bit farther out, and the rest of the world. So He said, "I want you to start with the people that you know." So when we talk about the world, those not connected to Christ, we start with those that are around us. People at work. Your neighborhood folk. People that you meet at the grocery store. People that you meet at the ball game. People that you meet as you're walking around your own neighborhoods. The people in your own life. People that are not connected to Christ. Now, we're going to look at this connection to the world in connection with all the other connections we've been looking at. We've been in this series with the seven connections. And so I want to put this seventh connection in the context of those first six. So we, first of all, 7 weeks ago, talked about our number one connection, which is our connection to who? To God. Our connection to God. Our vertical relationship. And remember, we used the illustration of baseball and how baseball really isn't about home runs and ERAs and pennant races and so on. That's not really what baseball is about. What baseball is about is connecting people. That's really what the game is all about. And baseball has tools that help connect people to each other, connect their stories. A ball, a mitt, a bat. And you take these tools and you throw them in the mix and you put people in there and somehow these people connect. And they end up sharing a story together. And so we talked about our own relationship to God and the tools of that relationship. Remember what they were? Talking, listening repeatedly. Talking, listening repeatedly. It's kind of interesting as we've gone through these seven connections. This is kind of an aside, but it sort of relates. Last May, when I was in Europe with my son, I got an email. I was in Germany, and I looked up my email, and I got this email from the head of the Board of Publications of the Christian Reformed Church. It's now called Faith Alive, and they're sort of the publishing arm of the Christian Reformed Church and the Reformed Church in America. Anyway, this guy emailed me and he said, you know, we've been looking at things like the four spiritual laws. Remember the four spiritual laws? How to share your faith? It's been around a long time. And they said, you know, that really was never kind of a Reformed thing. And, you know, it's been around a long time. We're kind of looking at different ways of doing that. And we got your name from a few people. Thought you may have some thoughts about that. So I said, yeah, maybe I do. So when I got home, I met with him, and I talked to him in a little while. And he said, you know, could you put something together? So I put a little brochure kind of thing together, just put it together. And I brought it over to him and shared it with him. But I also wanted to make it sort of a picture. I thought, you know, the cool thing about the four spiritual laws is you can make a picture. You know, sin, and then you got the great chasm, and then you got, you know, the other chasm, you know, God is over here. And how, you know, you draw these pictures. And I thought, this is really, you can, on a napkin, you can sort of outline what Christianity is all about. So I thought, how could I do this new thing with a picture? So what I did is I said, well, I don't know if this is any good, but I drew a picture like this. I drew a man like this. And I said, you know, and I called this the dream. Remember the question, what is your spiritual dream? I said, that might be a question that you might be able to ask people. What's your spiritual dream? And how most people's dream, they say many things, but it boils down to God and others. That I have a dream to connect with God or the force or the universe or whatever it is that's out there. I have a dream of something that goes beyond what I see. But I also have a dream of connecting with my spouse, my kids. I want to make a difference in the world with someone else. This is what people have. They have this dream. But then there's a problem. Draw the same little person. God, others. There's a problem. Somehow people are frustrated in this dream to connect to God. And somehow there's all this brokenness and frustration in our connection to others. And I reference things from Genesis and so on. I said, you know, this is what we want. This is our experience. We want this, but we experience all of this. Well, where's the solution? Well, we have a problem with our relationship to God, and we have a problem with our relationship to others. And I called this the grace or something. Didn't know what to call it. That somehow the cross is somehow the answer to this. That we somehow need some help in this arena. We have this brokenness and we don't know what to do about it. And somehow Jesus helps in that arena. And then we talked, then the next panel, it was like, well, but how do you get the cross? How do you get the grace? How does this really work? And what I called it, without really thinking, I called it, you see that? I called it the path. How do we get there? Well, what is the path? What do I want this person that I'm talking to, what do I want them to do if they're going to start having a relationship with God and others? Well, you know, years ago at the Bible League, Jim wrote out some cute little creatures. And he did it like this. Maybe it's not big enough. I'll do a big one. He drew something like that. He said, this is talking. Do you see it? Here's the mouth. Talking. Then he said, and here's listening. Does that look like listening? Looks like an ear, doesn't it? So you get a mouth and an ear. So you got talking, listening. And then what happens if you keep doing that? A connection. A connection happens. So I thought, you know, that's, you know, without even thinking about it, but, you know, when we talk about our church being on a path to a Jesus way, what is that path? The way is Jesus the head and we're the body. But the path, how we get there, is this talking and listening. And then finally, back to the dream. We finally have that relationship to others and to God. So, in a way, what we've been talking about, you know, now if you take just this section here, the path, there's really these seven paths. There's these seven kind of connections. We've been talking about this talking and listening repeatedly over these seven connections. And this is the part that we've really been talking about in this whole process. That getting connected to God is not just you. It's not just about you. It's about you in all these connections. So we start with our connection with God. Talking is what? What do we call that? Prayer. Listening. The most consistent form of doing that. Reading the Bible. So, and repeatedly, the habit of doing this is our personal devotion. So we talked about getting personal devotion habits in our life. Then we looked at connection two. That somehow as human beings we have a desire to connect with someone else, a partner. We talked about marriage. But you see, even with kids, a lot of kids want a close friend. Even some of you that are older, you're not married. That desire to have at least one person in your life that you can share things with. And if you want a relationship, if you want a connection, it takes talking and listening. And if you want God at the center of that, it takes prayer and Bible reading together. And then we talked about connection three. That if you're married and you have children, you have this family. And if you want a close family, it takes talking, listening, repeatedly. And if you want God at the center of your family, it takes Bible reading and prayer. So we talked about getting those kinds of habits in our families. Reading the Bible together, praying together, singing together, worshiping together as a family. And how if we did that, can you imagine? Can you imagine all families out there in our community who are struggling and struggling to do anything together, fighting and brokenness? And then you think about some of our families here. Your family. Think about your family, what you have. You sit down and you read the Bible together. Maybe you recite this memory verse together. And your kids do this with you. Even this morning, you kids writing out this sermon and drawing pictures, and then you'll bring it home and your parents will look at it and you get a stamp. All this family activity that we have going on in our church and in your families. This is exactly what people need. Okay? So connection three. Then we looked at connection four. How, as families, we need to be supported in these things. In small groups. Talking, listening, repeatedly. Same thing that we've been doing in our families. And then a couple of weeks ago we looked at connection five, the church service. And really the church service is just a culmination of all the talking and listening repeatedly that have been taking place all week long in your personal life, in your marriage, in your family, in the small groups. And then we all come together in this church service. And we encourage one another and we support one another. It's the culmination, not the substitute for not doing any of those things all week long. And then last week, we looked at the kingdom. The kingdom, which is all that God is doing all over the world. Not just Pathway, but all that God is doing all over the world. And then remember, we turned the whole picture on its side. Okay, and we have a timeline. We have creation on one side, your life and eternity. Put the next one up. And put the next one up. And the next one. And how the kingdom started way back in creation. But you see that little funnel? The dotted line with the little funnel? That's your life. Your life and your marriage and your family, even your small group, and even your church is a small little part of all of human history. But you are connected to something that goes beyond that. And how as human beings we need to go beyond our own lives. How we're connected to a story that God has been writing ever since the beginning. And then finally, if you go to the next one, the world. The world. So now we're in a larger circle. The world. Those that are not connected to Christ. I had you read John chapter 3. Do you think we can recite John 3:16 together? For God so loved the that He leaves in Him should not perish everlasting life. A couple different versions going on there, but that's okay. God so loved the world, those that are not connected to Christ. Now, there's really two questions that we kind of have to answer as we think about sharing our faith with the world. First of all, what do we share? What do we share? And in what context do we share whatever it is that we're going to share. What do we share? You know, years ago we moved out. It was 1987. We moved to Vancouver, British Columbia. And finally I was living in mountains. And I had skied a little bit here in Michigan, but then I went to school and I hadn't skied much. So when I was out there in Vancouver, they have big mountains, and so I went to Whistler. And I went skiing at Whistler, and I had my old skis, you know, the skis that have the little strap that hook to your foot so that when you fall, some of you don't even know what that is. They used to have little pieces of rope that you tied the ski to your foot. And then when you fell, your ski batted you in the head all the way down the hill. But at least your ski wouldn't go down the hill. Now, of course, they have brakes. The ski goes a little ways away from you. Well, anyway, I had these old skis. They're pretty thin skis. And I remember going up the chairlift. And these chairs, they go on for a while. You could be on one for 6-7 minutes. So I was with this fellow, and he sat next to me. And he had these incredibly, maybe they weren't that wide, but in that day it seemed like it. But they were like wide skis. And I looked at those wide skis and I said, "So what's with the wide skis?" And he said, "Well, the wide skis are the way to go." And I said, "Well, why?" And he said, "Well, they work better." And I said, "Well, how does that work?" And he said, "Well, there's more surface area on the snow and because of the friction, tension, he said all kinds of things about these wide skis. But I was skeptical. You know, I had this skeptical look on my face. So finally, he was kind of frustrated with me. He said, "Look, don't take my word for it. Just go to the shop, rent a pair, and see for yourself." And I remember thinking, well, you know, he's got a point. He's got a point. I mean, we could sit here and argue about this. If I just rented them and see for myself, then I might have the answer. Well, that's what I was thinking. But you see, the whole conversation took a turn because of how he punctuated his sentence. Because what he said to me is, "Look, don't take my word for it. Go to the shop, rent a pair of wide skis, and see for yourself, for Christ's sake." That's what he said. So I responded with, "Oh, I know him too." And he said, "What?" And I said, "I know him too." And he said, "What are you talking about? Christ. Why are you talking about Christ?" I said, "I don't know. You brought him up." And he said, "I did?" I said, "Yeah. You said, don't take my word for it. Rent a pair of wide skis for yourself and try yourself, for Christ's sake." And he smiled. And I smiled. And I thought, you know, he'd been pushy about wide skis. I'm going to be pushy about Christ. So, I asked him about his dream. I said, "So, what's your spiritual dream?" And I went through this, okay? I went through this whole thing. You know, it was about a 7-minute thing. You can go right through it. I went right through it. But he was real skeptical. Just like I was, you know, with the wide skis. He was just as skeptical about Christ and Jesus as I was. So finally, I saw that the end of the run was coming. So I finally, you know, a little frustrated, I suppose, I finally looked to him and I said, "You know what? Don't take my word for it. Don't take my word for it. Why don't you just try talking and listening to God for 21 days? Just read your Bible every day, pray to God every day for 21 days, and see if he shows up, for Christ's sake." And then we parted. What I was doing is I was really just sharing what I do. You see, the four spiritual laws, and you can even see that a little bit here. What these plans of salvation, what these presentations tend to do is to share what Christianity is all about. If someone came up to you and said, "Say, so what's this Christianity thing, what's it all about?" Well, yeah, it's about, you know, that God made things a certain way, but then there was a problem, sin came into the world, and then Jesus comes in, you know. This is, you know, you're explaining what Christianity is all about. The problem is, how often have you had people come up to you and say, "So what's Christianity all about?" I mean, most of us know the four spiritual laws, but how many of you used it in the last year? the opportunity to explain all of Christianity in 3 minutes, just it doesn't come up that often. That's not where people are. You're at work and something happens. Well, let me explain Christianity to you for you real minute. You know, they have problems and your neighbor is thinking about leaving his wife. Well, let me explain what Christianity is about for you a minute. See, it's like, hold it. The context, I mean, it's a great thing to do, and it's a great way to explain Christianity. But the context in our lives doesn't come up that often. And a lot of us are hesitant to share what we know. Why do you think that is? Why are we hesitant to share what we know? Okay, we don't want to offend. We're skeptical, or they are. I think it's because we don't. When do you know enough? Do I know enough? I need one more class. I need one more study go around with this thing because I'm not sure. I haven't done that for spiritual law. I know Pastor Steve did it a couple years ago. I remember he had it on the board, but how does that go again? I don't remember. Most of us feel like we never know enough. We never know enough. You know, a Jehovah Witness comes to your door, knocks on the door. Do you let him in? How many of you just hide? Look, honey, if we just don't move, they'll think we're not here. You know, I had a friend in Vancouver. He didn't hide. He actually went on the street to find him. He'd see him visiting, and he'd track him down. You know why? Because he knew a lot. He was extremely confident because he knew a lot. Well, that's not most of us. Most of us feel like we don't know enough. But if you just share what you do, and what you do, and how what you do, what that does for you, well, that's not hard. I mean, that's the guy with the wide skis. He's just saying, look, I don't know how it works. It doesn't matter. Try it. I don't have all the answers that you want answered. But, you know what? You're the one that's unhappy with your skis. And if you'd like to try something different, try something different. So, what should we share? Well, let's share what we do. In other words, what our relationship with God is and how. What does that do for you? People can't argue with that. They can't argue. You can say, well, this is, you know, I don't know, I get up, I pray, I walk with God, I try to do what He says, and boy, life is, I don't know, pretty good. Well, how do you know there is a God? I don't know. I talk to Him every day, that's how I know. Well, how do you know you're not just talking to yourself? Well, it doesn't feel that way. You know, I'm just telling you what I do with my life and what it does. And if you're happy with your life doing what you're doing, then just keep doing it. But if you're not happy with where you're at, you know, you might want to try something. So, share what you do. The context. What are the contexts? What kind of context do we bump into in our life? And what I want to do is I want to go through these seven connections again. Oh, by the way, let's go to the next screen. This evangelism thing, you can go to the next one too. And the next one. One more. Nope. Go back. What happened to my dots? I have little electrons. I guess they didn't show up, eh? I do it in Mac, and then I bring it over here, and then something happens. Anyway, I had these little dots. Looked like electrons. Because connection seven, even though I drew it as kind of a circle, sort of encompassing all the circles, is really more like, you know, your old chemistry class, you know, an atom. And you see the electrons buzzing. You can't really see them, so we draw these things because they're buzzing all around. Well, that's what connection seven is really all about, because connection seven really buzzes around all the other connections. So that's what we're going to look at. We're going to just quickly go through these seven connections as they relate to the seventh connection. So, number one. Number one is our connection to God. I don't have slides for it. But number one is our connection to God. Now, how does that relate to the world? Well, the problem with sharing what you do, sharing the walk that you have with God, is you actually have to have one. You see, sharing what you know, you don't actually have to have a walk. You can just learn some things and just give someone what you've learned. But if you're going to share what you do, your walk with God, and what your walk does with you, for you, or through you, then you actually have to have one. So connection seven really starts with your own connection to God, because that's what you'll be sharing. Then connection two. Connection two is our partner relationship. And there's two different ways to look at these. One is as husband and wife. You know, I know many of you, husbands and wives, you sit down together, you pray, you read the Bible, and because you do that on some kind of regular basis, your relationship is pretty good. You know, you don't let things fester for weeks and weeks and weeks because you sit down and God sits down and you have to work it out. And so you have this marriage thing that's really pretty good. Do you know how many marriages out there are not so good? So when you meet someone at work or somewhere and they're complaining about their marriage, wow, here's an opportunity to share yours. Well, here's what my wife and I do. This is what it's like for us. Hey, maybe we can help you. Imagine all the opportunities that are out there for that. So that's one way to look at it. That with connection two, it's like you could, with your marriage, help another married couple. Another way to look at this is to think of the partner, or the second connection here, as a secular group. Because we're going to look at all these circles. And so far we've been looking at the sort of the spiritual circles in a way. But you can look at almost anything in life and they're the same circles. So in other words, to think of connection two in terms of connection seven, I know I'm probably confusing you, connection seven is to think of it this way. Instead of a spiritual partner, I'm going to have a secular partnership. In my first church, a new dentist moved into town, a little town of McBain, and he moved into town. He came from Detroit, just graduated, got his degree in dentistry. He was about 26 years old, moved into town. He was a brash, just not real lovable kind of a guy. He was there to make some money, and he bought a boat right away and some land, and he was there to make money. And so I met him, you know, he did my teeth, and we got talking. He played tennis. So I said, well, let's play some tennis. So I ended up playing tennis with him. Then the next summer, I was going to join the golf league. So I joined the golf league, played 9 holes on Thursday night, and I asked him to be my partner. People thought, what kind of crazy partner is that? Why would you want to be with him? Because I'm looking for a connection too, a secular connection too. I think we all should have a non-Christian friend. A person that's actually a friend that doesn't know Christ. Why not? You might not be your best friend, but are there people in your life right now who don't know Christ that, you know, I think I could be a friend with him. Because if I did that, see what's happening? Talking, listening repeatedly. And an opportunity to share who I am over time. Then connection three. So on the one way to look at it is your family is walking with God. And because of that, the things that we're doing and at church and all the family activities that we're trying to do, this is what families are missing. Do you know, I think sometimes we don't realize what we have. You don't realize the family that you have. The great family that you have and the good things that you're doing and how few families are doing the very things that you're doing. And how if you just entered their life a little bit, you could make a huge difference in the life of their family. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to get a secular family. Some of you already have one at work, maybe. You know, at work, there are people at work, a small group of people at work, that you probably see more than your family. Probably spend more time with these people than your real family. But you haven't thought of it in this way. This is a family. It's my secular family. I joined a hockey team last winter. I was playing on pickup hockey on Friday mornings at 5:45. And I got to be friends with one guy, and he asked if I would join their team. So I didn't know any of these people before, but I joined their team. And after we play hockey, everyone goes out into the parking lot. And we sit around for probably 45 minutes in the parking lot. And it's more of a small group, a little family. And so I joined that group. Every time we play, I join that group. And we talk about, well, there's two subjects that men, I guess, like to talk about. One is sports. You know, you got to know something about sports. And the other one kind of surprised me. I didn't know that there was much to talk about, but beer. I mean, I thought you just drink beer, but no, you talk about it too. There's apparently there's many different kinds, and it's a whole. I don't know how you can talk about that every week, but you do. So this is my secular family. Okay, now I'm in a little bit oddball in the middle of this family, and we talk and we listen. And a lot of times it's on these subjects over here, but once in a while, you know, a couple of them leave sometimes, and then there's only three of us. And then someone says something, and then it relates to family, and all of a sudden we're into something. See, it's a secular family that I put a little time into. And because I put time into it, talking, listening, talking. See, there's openings. There's openings into people's lives. And I can bring the connections that I have into their lives. Then the small group. You know, I guess it's a little bit bigger group. And a lot of you are part of bigger groups. You join an aerobic class. It's like a small group, but it's a secular small group. It's not sponsored by the church. It's sponsored by some community thing. You take some community ed class and you join this class. It's a secular group that you're a part of. But because you're a part of it, you end up talking and listening to each other. Your neighborhood. You know, your neighborhood is like a small group. You know, when you move into some place, you join the small group. Pastor Jim had an experience this past week. Do you want to tell it or do you want me to tell it? No, you want to tell it? Or are you afraid that you might say the wrong thing? Or Jim had a white dog experience this past week. Was it this week? The family noticed that, you know what dogs do, you take them for a walk, and if you don't pay attention, they do some business on somebody else's yard, right? You know what I'm saying? Well, they kept finding somebody's business on the front of their yard, but it was like a cow or something. It was like, you know, what's this from? How's this work? So anyway, it was like 2 o'clock in the night. What night was this? Tuesday? Sunday night, 2 in the morning. He hears some noise and he looks out the window and he sees this big white bear, he thought it was. It was like a bear. It was like this huge thing. And it was some kind of a dog. So his blood starts boiling, you know. This dog's on his front yard. And so he runs out. Did you put any clothes on? Put some clothes on. And he comes running out yelling, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, yelling at this dog, trying to scare it away. But the dog just kind of hunched up a little bit. So you can either retreat or yell louder. So he yelled louder at this dog, and finally the dog kind of slinked away, going in one direction. And then all of a sudden he heard, he wanted to know where the dog is going, because who owns this dog? I got to talk to this owner, you know? Who owns this dog? His dog's going down the road, and he hears, "Don't yell at my dog!" He's like, you know, trying to see who's yelling this. Am I getting it right? He said it a couple times, and he's like, "Where are you?" He was right behind him. The dog was going this way, but the owner was right behind him. So this 22-year-old kid comes up. "Don't yell at my dog! What's your dog doing on my lawn?" You know. You ever seen Jim kind of angry? Here it is, 2 in the morning, and they're yelling about a dog. But you know, Jim ultimately is a good guy, right? And a heart for God, and he's connected to God, and with his wife and his kids and his small group and mostly his church. He'd have to report this incident, you know. Byron Center man gets arrested for disturbance at 2 in the morning. You know, that wouldn't go. So in the middle of, and Jim doesn't subtly do things. He just switches on a dime. So all of a sudden, in the middle of the argument, he goes, "Oh, by the way, I'm Jim. What kind of dog is that?" So they end up talking for the next 15 minutes about dogs and this dog and that. And who are you? Oh, you're so-and-so's son. And, you know, and then, well, now because he knows his neighborhood. See, he's been in this small group for a couple of years now. He's been working this small group, talking, listening repeatedly, going to the parties, talking to the neighbors, doing different things with these people. "How's your mom doing? Because of that tough thing that she's going through. Well, you know, it's not very..." You know, what do they end up doing? Connecting. Why? Because Jim and Jeannie and the family have been connecting in this secular small group for the last few years. So here's something that could have gone sour. Instead, it goes the other way. And so when the guy left, he said, "You know, I'll come by tomorrow and see if anything was left behind." take care of that. So we all have these secular groups that we are already a part of, or that we could be a part of. And then connection five, the church. You know, the church, on the one hand, the church is, you know, most people come to the church because, you know, someone got involved in someone's life. But somehow there's a communal thing that we have here. We have a communal something going on here at Pathway, I think. In the last couple of years, we've doubled in size. And I think, in part, because of the communal nature of Pathway. That there's a communal spirit. There's a, you know, I guess it's our verse of last month. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault in a crooked and perverse depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe. Wow. Who doesn't want to be a part of a bunch of stars? People that are shining something. They have something that they're shining. See, sometimes the whole church can sort of radiate that shining, and people are attracted to that light. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is church size secular groups. You know, when you're on a sports team, you're a part of a sports thing. You're part of this larger thing. And it's an opportunity to get to know different kinds of people. My wife was a part of a quilting guild. And it ran like a church. Her second meeting, she was asked if she wanted to be on the prayer chain. Well, it was the information chain. They didn't have a prayer chain, but it was an information chain. And she was put on this or that committee. It was just like a church. So when you join these different organizations, things that we talked about last week, you have opportunity to rub shoulders with people who don't know Christ. The farmer's market, for example, is one of those places. If you come to the farmer's market, you know, yesterday I was at the farmer's market and I ended up talking to the Chinese pavilion selling lunch, whatever they sell. And, you know, we got talking and I get to share Pathway. It's all of Byron Center and all of Byron Center is there. And when I go, I get to rub shoulders with all these people that I wouldn't otherwise. They don't come to my house. They don't come to our church. But they're right there in our yard. Now, it's hard. You know, it's easy for me because eventually when I'm talking to someone, I have to tell them who I am. Oh, yeah, I'm the pastor here at Pathway. Oh, really? Wow. Oh, that's interesting. You know, so that's like a card I get to flip out. Of course, then they run away. But it's an easy thing to do. For you, it'd be like, okay, how do I go to this church? You know, maybe you could say that. Recently, there was a group selling coffee here and so on at the farmer's market, and they're tired of doing it and so on. So we asked if we could do it, if Pathway could be the coffee people. So we're going to need, you know, you to volunteer once. Do you think you could volunteer once a year, just a couple of you to do coffee? We'll have the Pathway Pavilion. What an opportunity to meet the people of our community. And an easy way to be Pathway. Yes, I am Pathway. Here's the coffee. So there's opportunities all around us. The food pantry is another one. If you go to the food pantry and you help out at the food pantry, guess what? Over time, oh, hey, how you doing? I saw you last time. You told me this. How's that going? See, when we become involved in different things, those things just lead to opportunities to what? To talk and listen, to connect. See, those are the areas out there that we're gonna have an opportunity to share. Now, some of you are doing this all the time. You have so many connections to people, you don't know what to do. But some of you, in your life, most of your connections are just with other Christians, which is great. But maybe you have to be more proactive in terms of, I gotta join a few secular things out there just so I can be into other people's lives so that God can use me to connect them. Well, I began with my AA meeting. Why don't you go to the next slide? There we go. Step 12. This is step 12 of the 12 steps of AA. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, as a result of my talking and listening to God in my personal life, my marriage, my family, my small group, my church, being connected to the kingdom, as a result of all of that, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. We try to carry this message of what God can do to the people that we meet in our lives. That's interesting. You know, the AA folk, Dr. Bob and Bill, wrote, you know, these 12 steps. And that first half seems like a good place to end. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, in other words, I have something, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics, period. That's where you should end. But it was like they were thinking, okay, yeah, but we got to be careful here. And to practice these principles in all our affairs. In other words, what they found is often people, they'll get something, it's really good, and then they start sharing it, but they don't keep doing the good thing that got them the good thing in the first place. And so I guess we come back to where we started. I want to go to 1 Thessalonians. This was in your reading this past week. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 19. Paul writes, "For what is our hope, our joy, or the crown in which we glory in the presence of our Lord Jesus when He comes? Is it not you? Indeed, you are our glory and joy." I guess that's what I want to end with. On the one hand, we need something to share. And I think we have, don't we? Don't we have something to share? Don't you have a walk with God personally in your marriage and your family? Hey, it's not perfect. But don't you have something? Okay, you have something to share. You know, that's probably the greatest thing in life, to be able to give someone something that you have. To give someone else the good thing that you have. Paul says, that's my glory. That's my joy. Let's pray together. Lord, we're so thankful that we do have something, that we have a relationship with You, a real, talking, listening relationship. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down, sometimes we don't want to listen, sometimes we do. Over time, we learn to trust You more and more, and we see the blessings that come from that. And then we see others who are struggling in certain areas. Lord, help us. Give us opportunities to just share what we have. We don't have all the answers. Can't figure it all out. But help us to just share what we have. If we just begin a walk today, brand new, help us to share whatever that was for someone tomorrow. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.